Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.
B-Pod Studios.
Now, sports talk while you're on the clock. This is Zolak and Bertrand.
I'm going to slap you because you fake it.
On 98.5 The Sports Hub.
What up, what up? Happy Monday.
Yeah.
How you doing, Zo?
Great. Good morning.
I have an echo. I don't know what,
do you?
How to get rid of that.
Do you?
Yeah.
Do you?
Do you really?
How do you
do
get
you
rid
really?
Of that? How do you get rid of that?
How do you get rid of that?
Don't be a dick. Don't be a dick. Don't be a dick.
Is that on my end?
That's what she said.
It sounds fine here. It sounds fine here.
I sound great. I sound great.
Is that right?
Oh, damn it. Phil, I'm good. Good to go. Peter, why don't you...
No, hold on, Peter.
Why don't you sign back on and...
Yeah.
It'll be Hey Hardy for like...
Hey, it's Hardy.
Hey, did they get back to you on that show, that Hey Hardy, because it was so good that one day?
It was so good. They said, we can't allow you to do this anymore. It's too good. It's making all the other shows look bad. So,
you said the signal blew up because it was just like everybody, hey, how do I get this?
Yeah. I mean, it was, what do you want? I mean, don't take any offense to it. You are brought down. Maybe if you did your own show on the weekends, the Hey It's Zo show, maybe it'd be really, really good too. But I think it's safe to say that, you know, we all have a tendency to drag each other down from time to time.
Wow, and you just boosted. Oh, my God. I have echo like crazy. Holy crap. Oh, this is awesome.
We might have to disconnect both of you guys.
Oh, my God. This is so much fun.
The point is, though, if you were given the opportunity to do your own show, I think it would be really good. Would it be as good as the Hey It's Hardy show? Probably not. But
I wouldn't have the outreach of guests that you have.
Oh, yeah. Correct.
Because your guests are so good that day.
Yeah,
I was one of them.
Yeah, you were. Happy birthday, Dan Driscoll, before we get any further on to the show.
Now explain who Dan Driscoll is for all our listeners out there.
He's an electrician. Dan Driscoll Electric turns 55 years old today. He's a friend of mine.
Wow! So, I got echo again.
Okay, you're gonna have to either ignore it, or disconnect.
Okay.
There we go. Let's just continue the show for a while with just me here in studio with Zolak and Bertrand on different locations. You can just turn Zo down. I thought we had this all figured out, but apparently it's still a work in progress. If you watched the last two episodes of The Last Dance last night, we're going to be talking about that today. We're going to be talking more about Major League Baseball. We're also, of course, going to be talking about the announcement and the policy change, presumably coming from Governor Baker later today. We'll be talking about that as it happens. We'll be talking about some of the different policies that sports are still bouncing around, with some getting closer, some still seemingly pretty far away from having any kind of resolution as to when they're going to come back. And we're going to talk about the live sports that were on this weekend, whether it was NASCAR or whether it was...
I can't do this. I get echo again.
Okay. Well, then you just turn off and reconnect, and we'll be back with you in a second. So, we're going to talk about the TaylorMade Driving for Relief tournament that took place yesterday. That was between Rory McIlroy, Dustin Johnson, Matt Wolf, well, a lot of people didn't know who that was going into it, and maybe still don't know anything about him. If you watched any of the tournament, you know about his crazy-ass okay. swing and how long he is off the tee. But, and Ricky Fowler, which served as a bit of a, I guess a template maybe for what's going to take place next weekend, and that's the one
Billy,
that
everyone, you got me?
I think, is looking forward to.
You got me, Billy?
You can turn those guys down, baby.
You know what this is? Okay, we're both up.
Until they're
okay,
connected.
What's the date? May 18th? May 18th? Our place has had it. Okay. We're all back. Let's just go back. Hell with what
I guess
he says
I'm back on.
We're going back.
You guys can hear me?
It's time to go back, people.
Yeah.
This is a sign. This is a sign from
all right, we're good.
A sign from higher powers, man. Radio powers.
We're good.
B.
We're good. It's working. So, you got me? We're all good?
I'm here, man. Yeah, everything sounds great.
Okay. Good.
This might
good
be
then.
One of the best starts ever on a show.
I don't
good
even
job,
know
Hardy.
What you did for the last 5 minutes. But good job, Hardy. Whatever it was, I'm sure it was great. Hey, it's Hardy.
No, we were just laying out all the stuff we're going to be talking about today.
Ricky
and I just started.
Nice.
And I'd just gotten into talking about the fact that we will be talking about the golf tournament later and how that might serve as a template for the thing that presumably everybody wants to watch next weekend, the Phil Tiger, Tom Brady, Peyton Manning thing. But,
yep.
man, they're going to have to – I hope they learned their lesson on a few fronts yesterday. But we'll save that for later.
Yeah, they put right, entertaining people on next week.
Let's get into The Last Dance. Last night, final two episodes yeah. on The Last Dance happened last night, episodes 9 and 10 on ESPN. And I would say the last three episodes of the series took a strong view of the basketball that was being played. That's what the, I guess, the focal point is, what I'm trying to say. They focused on the games. They focused on the championships at the end, which were great in my mind. 98 was awesome. And they did a lot of time on 97 and 98 and the back-to-back championships against Utah and the end of the Bulls run. The Last Dance, they finally got around to focusing mostly on the basketball and less on Jerry Krause and less on some of the side stuff that was going on. So I thought the finish was strong to quite strong. It was what I was looking for most out of this. And I thought the sort of the look back on those years was what was good about the last, you know, not just the last two, but I think it started now in hindsight, it started with episode 8 too.
Yeah, and for me, it's just the whole superstardom of Michael Jordan, and you know, obviously we lived it, we watched it, but I don't think we understood the magnitude of it. To see people gravitate to him, it's almost like, you know, it's like a member of the Beatles. You know, it's like Paul McCartney walking through. And just, you know, like the security with the buses, the people constantly pushing people back, just his ability to walk in a room and just command all of the attention in it. And how he handles it and how he was okay with everything. And I know Mike could have been smarmy at times, but it just, when you're living it and you're watching it, do you really appreciate it? Because I don't think we did at the time, or how much effort, how much of his emotion. And you remember we talked about this with Brady for 20 years. He talked about it takes up so much of my energy and attention to detail. Like when you're that good, when you're like Kobe, when you're like Mike, when you're like Tiger, when you're like Brady, it takes everything out of you. It exhausts you to the point. And just how he's able to sit there at the end on that bench and just, you know, collect his thoughts. He's like, I'm just trying to find just a little bit more energy just to get back out there. And they're down one, and you're looking at it, and they keep showing the scoreboard. I thought it was done well. I really did. It's tough because they stretched it out over weeks, and maybe you forgot to watch one night or this, and then you're catching up on it. But last night was great. And he is the king of the oversized suit. They need to bring back the zoot suit, man. You know, the big shoulders, the long length, the baggy pants. That was so in style then. And Mike Warden wore it well. It was awesome
to
watch.
So I'm fascinated by sort of the psychology of Michael Jordan, as I think we always are with the greatest in anything. And he is, in my mind, the greatest athlete I've ever seen in my lifetime. Michael Jordan is. And so that's what I think we got maybe a glimpse into with The Last Dance that we otherwise would not have had. Is what makes this guy tick? How does he tick? How does this work for him? And I think we saw all of that, whether it's making up slights, literally making things up to feel like someone had slighted him. He admits later on, after having made things up that people had said to him, to get him to be as motivated as he was, and how he was always at his best when he found a way to just be pissed at somebody. That was how he sort of went. And I found that interesting about Michael Jordan. And I also noticed, and I don't know if you guys noticed this too, although he offered compliments of players that he played with, you know, he spoke highly of Scottie Pippen at times. He spoke highly of Steve Kerr at times. So both ends of the roster, if you will. But I would say that over the course of 10 episodes, did we hear Michael Jordan offer any strong compliments of anyone he didn't play with? Someone that was on the opposing team at any point?
I mean, he had good things to say about Magic, obviously.
Right. I mean, was it more personal or was it?
He gave one with Isaiah, but he crushed him. You know, he didn't like him, but second best point guard I've ever played with.
Yeah.
I don't think he can really bring himself to really admit nice things about other guys that are not on his team.
Well, there was the thing last night, and she was watching the ends of like episodes 7 and 8 because she wanted to like catch up before the episodes last night. And I think the Gary Payton stuff was from episode 8.
Yes.
So, you know, Gary Payton, who did do a good job against him in, you know, like two games or one of the series. Like,
Games 4 and 5, right, when he finally got around to guarding him, yeah.
Yeah, it's like, even then he was like, the glove. No, I didn't have any problem with the glove. But, yeah, he did have good games against him. You know, like
but
B.J.
Jordan
Armstrong
couldn't admit
had
it.
A good
Jordan could not admit it. Yeah. He couldn't admit that B.J. Armstrong had a good game against him. Couldn't admit that Gary Payton had a good game against him. He would not go there.
Right.
Even if it's for a game. And it leads you to believe that any time they didn't win, they believe it was because of them and not anybody else.
Yeah, and some of it is the mentality for sure. I thought it was interesting last night how he, you know, he came off as cocky, arrogant. You know, the scene from a couple episodes back when he's smoking the cigar constantly with the cigars and swinging the baseball bat. He's like, "No, one game, no big deal, just bumping the road." And they talked about how it's very zen-like. It's very present. He's always in that moment. You know, he's always focused in, and you might mistake it, or I'm not even sure if it is like a simplicity, like he's just very, you know, what you see is what you get with Jordan.
Yeah.
But other people, Phil Jackson among them, attributed it to, oh no, he's deep. Like he is so deep that he comes across as being superficial and simple because it takes a lot. People work, as they said in one of those episodes last night, like their whole lives trying to find that thing that can get them present and get them to be in the moment. And Michael did that. And I don't know. I don't know if he was, you know, so brilliant he came across as being very, very, you know, plain and very obvious, or if it was, no, he was just really in that moment because he didn't have anything else he was ever thinking about. I don't know. I really don't know the answer, but that was it, Beetle. Like, I don't even know now that he can go back and give credit where it's due. Who knows what got left on the editing room floor, but it didn't seem like there was a whole lot of praise being thrown around even 22 years later about people that he faced in his final real season of basketball.
But here's the crazy part.
I wonder how many blow-ups there were. I wonder how many blow-ups were that were never filmed or that hit the cutting room floor, because you have a long season like that, and they're there in your face. You got the cameras, and you're going to explode at some point. You know, and it didn't seem like they ever showed that, and there had to be bad moments.
But I believe them. I believe that they felt that way and that they were right in feeling that way. When the Bulls lost during that stretch, during that 8-year run, it was because of Michael Jordan playing baseball, and that was it. Because they, first of all, when he was playing, the only time they lost was when he came back at the end of 95.
Or Pippen being hurt, right?
When he came back at the end of the season, and he fully admits, you know, I wasn't up to it. I was in baseball shape. I wasn't in basketball shape. I was in the wrong sport. I had spent so much time playing baseball that I wasn't ready to play basketball yet. And so that was why we lost. We never lost because someone actually beat us. Really, in that decade, I guess, if you will. They never admit that. And from, you know, the first championship on, he's not wrong. The Bulls aren't wrong to feel that way. Phil Jackson isn't wrong to feel that way. They were that good. They were that good. So when I see the poll, by the way, that ESPN conducted, they sampled 600 fans in the debate of Michael Jordan versus LeBron, which I think is such a bad debate. And I like LeBron James. I think he's a wonderful player. 73% said Jordan is better. I want to know who those 27 are. Who the hell is in that group of 27% that thinks LeBron James is a better player than Michael Jordan?
I would almost put Kobe ahead of LeBron. And I know LeBron's got the power, but ever since Kobe passed, you read all the stuff on him and that whole Mamba mentality. And it seems like he was the closest thing to Jordan. It doesn't feel to me that LeBron, I don't know if he has the mental ability or wants that or has that grind that Jordan did or has that killer instinct. I think LeBron likes being popular, likes being considered the best. It seems like to me that Kobe was the closest thing to what Jordan was. But I would still put Jordan way above Kobe.
So we'll talk about Jordan today, and we talk about the final episodes. There were some great moments in the final couple of episodes last night that we will get to. And also what one NBA, one thought on the NBA and whether or not guys would want to play with Michael Jordan. And it relates to this LeBron James thing, a former teammate of LeBron James saying nobody would want to play with Jordan now. We'll get to that coming up. And your calls in reaction to the Last Dance, which ended last night after 10 episodes. Also today, Charlie Baker is going to speak at 11 a.m. It's a highly anticipated day for Charlie Baker, as May 18th has been circled on the calendar now for weeks as a date. We will learn more about the reopening of the state. We will carry that live for you coming up at 11, so you don't have to go anywhere else for that. More on Jordan and the Last Dance next.
Scott Zolak, Mark Bertrand, Zoe and the Beatle. Zoe and the Beatle, 98.5 The Sports Hub.
Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada, a destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs, the freshest flavors from land and sea, world-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island, Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.
Wake up, lip readers.
Jacob in Dorchester, are you an expert lip reader?
It's the show whose name is on everyone's lips.
Hey!
Zolak and Bertrand.
Well, you might need the lip reading because you don't listen.
98.5, The Sports Hub.
In 98... Kraus already said at the beginning of the season, Phil can go 82-0, and he was never going to be the coach. So when Phil said it was the last dance, it was the last dance. We knew they weren't going to keep the team. Now, they could have nixed all of it at the beginning of 98. Why say that statement at the beginning of 98? If you ask all the guys who won in 98, Steve Kerr, Judd Busler, blah, 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 we give you 1 year contract to try for 7. You think they would have signed? Yes, they would have signed. Would I sign for 1 year? Yes, I would have signed for 1 year. I've been signing 1 year contracts up to that. Would Phil done it? Yes. Now, Pip, you would have to do some convincing, but if Phil was going to be there, if Dennis was going to be there, if MJ was going to be there to win our 7th, Pip is not going to miss out on that.
Michael Jordan claims they all would have taken 1 year contracts to come back the following year for 98-99.
You know what the best part of that was?
What?
Called himself MJ. He third person.
Third person, you know, himself.
He went through the list. Yeah, MJ was going to be there.
Sure, yeah.
Outside of his outer body experience, that's when you know you got it.
So he claims they all would have gone back on a 1 year contract, and he expressed that he was sort of pissed that it was over in Chicago, and I don't ever remember him doing that publicly before. Maybe he has. I just don't recall that. And so he expresses how disappointed he was that it all came to an end after they won it. And
they could have had another.
Phil Jackson was offered his job back by the owner of the team, and he didn't want to do it because Jerry Krause was still going to be there, and he said, that's not going to work. He doesn't want me here. And
I wouldn't want it either. If you're going to tell me you could go 82-0 and you still aren't going to be back, like, why would he want to come back to that?
And Reinsdorf says, well, it could take a couple of years for Jerry to build another championship team, which Jordan basically laughs at when he sees the comment being made that, like, he was going to stick around. He said, no, we would have all come back on a one-year deal. They could have signed all of us to one-year deals, and we would have gone for it again for our 7th. And I just say, at what point is he going to own, if ever, and he won't. He'll never own this. The fact that they could have had 7, they could have had 8. But they didn't because he walked away. He left the game. whether it was his own decision or some other conspiracy reason. He was the one that wasn't there for two seasons. And I know that he was there at the end of the second one, but he even admits that he wasn't himself. Maybe they would have had seven. Maybe they would have had eight. But he was the guy that decided to walk away and go play baseball. And so if the Bulls were robbed of anything, you can easily make the case that they were robbed of it by Jordan. Like, he walked away. That was his call. Team didn't want him to leave. His teammates didn't want him to leave.
Yeah.
You think his teammates felt great when he was like, I'm leaving you guys to go play baseball?
I mean, I'd be like, what are you doing?
Right.
What the hell are you doing? Unless they all knew that maybe he was forced to go away for a little bit. You know, that's what people think. That's what people truly think about this.
Which is kind of telling, too. I mean, it's like, you know, for those of us who still feel like that whole story hasn't been told even after this, there is that minor hiccup in the narrative. Oh, we could have had seven. We could have had eight. Exactly, Beetle. Had you not gone away for a couple of years, I don't think anybody is really disputing that. You probably had.
They've accepted it. Like, how come more people aren't bitching, Hardy? You know what I'm saying? Like, what are you doing? You're the greatest basketball player ever. What the hell are you going to play baseball? You're in your prime. You're in your prime here. We're winning championships. This is ridiculous. There aren't enough of those books written.
I just I think it's wishful thinking, and again, rewriting history to go back and say, absolutely, we all would have come back on 1 year deals. You know, starting with Phil and with me and with Dennis and with Scotty. You know, Scottie Pippen was finally going to go make a real paycheck somewhere.
Pippen wasn't going to do it.
He
was already bitching about money.
But the whole premise of this was it was the last dance because the team had decided they were done with this group of players. So Jerry Krause had already said before that year it even started, this is not happening anymore with Phil. This is Phil's last year. All of that was said. So they operated on that premise, and this is what they named the documentary on. It's why in 98 they allowed the cameras in. That's why those cameras were there, because they knew it was the end of the run. And so if you're pissed after you won that you didn't get to bring it all back again at the age of 35, well, where the hell were you at age 30 and 31? Like, you're being, you know, upset about Scottie Pippen, who's now in his 30s with a bad back, and Rodman, who is obviously 5 years older than what you were when you were off playing baseball. Like, what are you mad about? So you want to make Jerry Krause out to be this awful guy. At what point do those guys get to turn around and say, you know what, it wasn't Jerry Krause. We could have won more, but we didn't because our best player decided to go screw around playing baseball for a year. And they try and, like, make it sound better, like, oh, he would have made it to the major leagues. And even if he did, what was he doing? He was the great – Hardy, this goes to your point. When is it enough? When is it enough to just be the greatest basketball player ever? That wasn't enough for you? Like, you know, so you can't sit there if you're him and be mad at the Bulls for being at the end of that run, because he took off 2 years in his prime. He missed 2 years and they missed out on the chance for more because of that.
Yeah.
So I hear that at the end of the episode last night, and I say, well, that's not entirely fair. You walked away from them too.
Yeah. Not only did he walk away, but to think that you could just, after going through the whole season and calling it the last dance, and not just now in documentary, but as we heard Phil Jackson say last night with footage from that time and all those guys talking about it was their last time, how much motivation did that supply toward that, you know, that last championship that they got? You know, like, you go see, you know, Zoe, the Eagles on what they all believe is their farewell tour. Not the Hell's Frozen Over. No, really, what they believe, those concerts are going to be great. The final concert of the final tour is going to be great. Unless they all have in the back of their mind that, oh, maybe we'll come back. And then they do it. Is it going to be as good the second time around? The performance. We're talking about a performance. How do you get yourselves up again for another last time?
Right
afterward. I mean, there's something missing. The urgencies, the sense of, you know, history. If you go back on it one time, who's to say you're not going to do it again? And I'm not saying that they wouldn't have won it, but I think it would have been tougher. And, you know, that stat that they showed last night, which was, I almost wanted to go back and look at it, Beetle, the number of game sevens that they had played in their championship run. Did you happen to catch that last night?
Two. Twice.
Right. Two times over the course of six championships had they had to play a game
over.
Seven. And
it
one
was
of
over, right?
Right. One of them was in that last year, and it did take six games to dispose of Utah. So I don't know. There's a chance maybe they wouldn't come back and win a seventh, you know, when you factor all that in.
Speaking of that, when they lost in Chicago to force it to go back to Utah,
yeah.
Did you see that where he's in the locker room and he's telling, he said to whoever Tex was,
yeah.
You know, I'll put a ring on that finger tonight. That's what I'm going to do. And those guys were pretty much prepared to win that night and thought they were going to win that night.
Yeah.
Isn't that great when you sort of see the things you say, like, oh, these guys got caught up in thinking they were going to win the game tonight. They thought it was over. And it hurt them badly. You saw that play out from a behind the scenes look right into the game. They played like garbage that night. They were playing tight. They thought it was in the bag. They thought they were going to win that night at home, and they had to go back to Utah. I thought that was like good behind the scenes stuff that you don't get enough of, period, in sports. Like, that was great.
Yeah, that was really good. There were some really good moments there, and I'm glad they didn't gloss over all that stuff. Would have been very easy to leave out the statements of, you know, guaranteeing wins, yeah, and stuff. And the final guarantee came when, you know, Jordan said, oh, they were going to win. And, you know, okay, that's fine. But there were plenty of times where they thought they had things closed out earlier on in the series when they thought they were going to close out Phoenix and win it all that night in Chicago. And, of course, they didn't go back. And Barkley had the great line, what I thought was the best line of the entire series, because the people of Chicago had boarded up their windows and they were getting ready for the celebration. And instead, Phoenix won. And when asked about it, Barkley, you know, what do you have to say to the fans of Chicago? He said, take that bleep off the windows. You don't need it tonight. It's not over yet. You know, that was the stuff that I'm glad they left in there, because it showed that, yeah, they were far from perfect. You know, there were times when they were, you know, thought they were going to win, were all but convinced they were going to win, and they didn't win. Ultimately, they did, of course, but not in what would have been the best times and places for them to do it. You know, their home court in front of the fans, everyone expecting it, and it didn't always go down that way.
Channing Frye, former teammate of LeBron James, 13-year NBA vet, had these comments on a podcast on NBC Sports in the Talkin' Blazers podcast. This is his thought on Jordan. He said he only really had one job, and that was to just score, and he did that at an amazing, amazing rate. But I don't feel like his way of winning then would translate to what it is now. Guys wouldn't want to play with him. That is Channing Frye saying that at the end of last week. Oh, boy. Does that say more about the NBA now and the players in the league now? Is that about the fact that Jordan's
I think it's more about the players now.
Bit of an irritating guy, and people can't handle that now? Is that what that is?
I think it's demanding. Like, the players are too lax now. They give it too much freedoms, you know, cushy. Time restrictions. You're only going to play so many minutes tonight. We're going to manage you, you know.
Well, it's just
that didn't happen.
The sensitivity of players now, I think, is a lot greater. It's like the stuff that he said to Scott Burrell. My God, there was the one scene last night where he says, if I ever see you again after we're done playing, I'm going to whoop your ass. You know that. I don't care where it is. It could be in a park. It could be in a bar. I'm just going to beat the crap out of you. Like, it went beyond bullying. I mean, that was like, and he seemed to take it all in stride. But that was the stuff that Jordan did then, that those guys seemed to be able to handle. What was the result? They won. They won time after time after time. I don't know that many NBA players would stand for that now. I don't know if you get guys sticking
around.
I mean,
it might be true. He was not a good teammate. That became painfully obvious during the course of this, that he was not a good teammate. I don't think he was any sort of great leader. I mean, there are a lot of people trying to say, oh, look at the leadership that Michael Jordan. They were afraid of this guy. They were afraid of him, and a lot of players backed down to him in practice, his own teammates. Obviously, Steve Kerr was not one of those guys. That's why he ended up getting punched in the face by Michael Jordan. So there were a few guys that would stand up to him, but I don't think that it – did you see any great leadership that was on display, or just great play that other players maybe elevated themselves being around him?
No,
being challenged by him on the court.
It was playing, and you had to deal with Rodman all the time.
know?
I think the leadership came, you know, mostly, if not entirely, from Phil Jackson, you know? And,
yes.
And whereas you would have maybe other dynamics where the, you know, the leader would be, you know, the guy on the court, you know, playing with you guys every day, and you could all kind of rally around and respect but secretly hate the coach. They all rallied around and respected and secretly hated Michael, but then they got all their direction and guidance from Phil Jackson. Because Michael would just sit there and, like, jaw at people during practice. And, you know, when it came time for someone to step aside and do an interview, it's like, nope, we're going to play golf. Nope, come on. You come over right here. Put your clubs over there. It was, you know, bully's the wrong word, but he was abrasive. He was constantly abrasive.
I have more respect for Phil Jackson after this than I did before watching it.
I thought, you know what? I thought the whole, you know, mystique of Phil Jackson was a bit overblown. It's like, come on. You coached Michael Jordan. You coached Kobe Bryant, Shaquille O'Neal together at the same time. How good a coach do you need to be? Turns out he had to be pretty damn good for those years with Michael to keep those guys together and to allow Dennis Rodman. Holy crap, we haven't talked about what Dennis Rodman did, which we should probably discuss here in a moment, and allow Dennis Rodman to go off and do what he needed to do, because it all worked. It all worked.
Yeah, they figured it all out. Also, the flu game, the story about the flu game that was in last night's episode that I had not heard before. And we'll throw that into the mix. You'll hear the audio and the story of how the flu game came to be after this.
If Heineken Silver was a 60-second radio ad, it'd tell you all the stuff you need to know in only 30 seconds to keep things light and refreshing. Seriously, time me. Heineken Silver, a world-class light beer that's surprisingly crisp and refreshing, made with only premium quality ingredients and just 2.9 grams of carbs and 95 calories, all without compromising on taste. Heineken Silver, all the taste, no bitter endings. Order now at Heineken.com/silver. Must be 21 and older to purchase. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Whew. 30 seconds. That's it. Done. Peace.
Zoe and Beetle in the office.
It's like a sweater without nipple covers.
In the car.
You smell bacon?
In the truck.
I'm definitely not stupid, Harvey.
Getting you through your work day on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
It's like 10, 10:30 at night. I'm hungry.
No room service. Michael gets hungry. So, all right, so we're calling all these different places. George and I are looking around. We find one pizza place open. One.
So he ordered a pizza. And when the pizza came, there was four or five guys outside the door.
Five guys delivering one pizza.
You know, it's very rare that you get five delivery guys from, you know, the pizza place to bring you your pizza.
And they're all trying to look in, and, you know, everybody knew it was my... So I take the pizza, I pay them, and I put this pizza down, and I said, I got a bad feeling about this.
I eat the pizza all by myself. Nobody else eats it. Eat the pizza. I wake up about 2:30, throwing up left and right.
3 o'clock in the morning, I get a call. My roommate, man, come to the room right now. All right, I get into him. He's literally curled up in a ball, shaking. He goes, man, find a team doc now.
So it really wasn't a flu game. It was food poisoning.
That's from The Last Dance last night. Michael Jordan claims the flu game was not him having the flu. It was him having food poisoning from a pizza he ate that was delivered to the hotel when they were out in Utah.
Okay, all right. Did he get food poisoning? Did he have something, or maybe a bug? Probably, okay? I just find this whole pizza story hard to believe.
I do too.
They, again, go back to the beginning. So all they did, they were calling all kind of pizza joints. Nobody was open. And they just found this one singular pizza joint. And by the way, you're going to tell the people that it's for Michael Jordan, who's playing in a basketball game tomorrow. No, when you're on the road, and I'm on the road with the teams, I see guys bringing in takeout all the time. They call it. You could have anything delivered to your room. Anything. You could call downstairs and get a pizza. What are they staying at? The Days Inn? No, they're staying at the freaking Marriott, right? So all of a sudden you have no room service down there. Nobody can help you acquire a pizza or any. You're freaking Michael Jordan. You know what? It's like Tommy Boy. Hey, you know what, Helen? Why don't you go back here and turn on the fryer? Because I'm in the mood for chicken wings. They could have Tommy boyed him. They could have turned on the fryer. They could have made a chicken wings.
I had a question.
Fries. This is
I doubted this right away. So
it's a good story because people like to hear it. You know, if it plays up. Go ahead.
If you're in a hotel that's nice enough that you have a freaking piano in your room, my guess is there's someone downstairs that could cook you something.
When you're Michael Jordan getting ready to close the team out, yeah. You know,
like they're
it's
not
really
staying
nice
in the Motel 6. No offense to Motel 6, but that is not where the Bulls are staying.
I call bull crap.
I didn't
call
such like,
bull crap.
Like, oh, there's no room service at 10:30 at night. I'm like, that hotel looked pretty swanky. And yeah. the guy had a suite that had his own grand piano in the room.
Probably
they didn't have
butler.
Room service?
They probably had a pizza oven inside the room.
They didn't
the
have a
room.
Restaurant in that hotel somewhere?
Oh,
like,
give me a
what?
Break. Give me a break. They would have cooked him a filet if he wanted one. That's such crap.
By the way, did you guys enjoy the final one of the final scenes where he was in his hotel room with the reporters and the
yes.
and the cameras banging away on the piano like
yes.
a 3-year-old?
Yeah,
like,
here's
you know what?
Here's another one too.
It reminded me of Zoe like getting behind the drums at the bar
and
that
Howl
one
at the Moon.
Yeah, just yeah. banging away. But look at me. Why don't you stop that? Why don't you? What you're doing right now is noise.
You know what annoyed me about that? Because the same guy there was a guy that had a red blazer on. Some white guy with a goatee and a mustache. Looked like a total D-bag Klingon guy. And he had his sleeves up, and Mike's banging on a piano, and he's got his beer bottle. And he's like, yeah, man, keep jamming. This is great. Like, who are you, D-bag?
Oh, the guy in red. Who was
yeah,
that guy?
I don't know, but
yeah,
you know what? It's probably some big money guy with Jordan.
I noticed him, too.
He probably closed all my – but, see, David Falk was his agent. So I'm trying to think, okay.
I'm like, who's this hanger-on over here? Okay. You're the best, Michael.
Yeah.
I love you, Michael.
Man. You're the greatest
Keep
man.
Keep playing piano, Michael.
I love when you ding, ding, ding. Play chopsticks, man. Do that one. Yeah, man. Yeah.
Two things.
Go ahead.
Number one, two things. If it were really food poisoning, as we're sitting there watching it last night, we said, well, what happened to the pizza place? Who called the pizza
right.
place? Right. Like, where's the follow-up on that? So I'm not buying the food poisoning.
Ravel had a tweet, the pizza place has never been named.
Yeah, right.
So the pizza place has never been, figured out.
Something I think I figured out, but I don't know, and I need to ask you guys. The guy named George, I think, who kept being identified as his best friend and assistant, is he the guy in the earlier footage who I thought was just like a Bulls or stadium security guy, the guys who was like pitching pennies with him in a much earlier
yes.
episode? He kind of had an
yes.
afro yeah. almost.
Yeah. That's him.
That's the
yeah.
same guy?
He was the guy that, well, I don't know if it's the same guy, but he's in that old crew. And he brought in a lot of the other security guards. A lot of them were former Chicago cops.
So when they were cutting last night, and maybe this guy has been in earlier episodes, but I don't remember seeing him before the last two episodes last night. George, the best friend and assistant, he must have been in earlier episodes too. He's that guy. He's the really short, skinny guy with kind of like the... it's almost like a Richard Marx haircut, kind
yeah,
of like.
Yeah, you're not talking like about the guy in red, right?
A curly mullet.
It might be him.
The guy with the curly
yeah,
mullet and the mustache.
Yeah.
That's George?
That's the guy I'm talking about, the D-bag in
no,
red.
No, the guy who was playing quarters, the guy with the mullet?
Yeah.
Can't remember.
No, that's not his name. I'll look up his name.
So
I'll
he was
up.
A stadium security guy then.
Yeah, but he also worked for Jordan on the side. Yeah.
Well, where is George in any of these in any of this old footage? If he was Jordan's best friend, and
you're
his...
talking about the guy right there on the left with the glasses?
No.
Oh,
no.
I thought you were talking about this guy. This
no.
is. I think
that's
his last
guy,
name was Tell.
That's the guy Mike kept calling right after his dad died.
Yes.
Saw it to him like I miss
yes.
my dad.
But he was one of the guys on the security staff.
Yeah.
For the Bulls, and he also worked
like
for Jordan
a father
too.
For him. Yeah.
Yeah. I don't know who this other guy is that you're talking about, Artie. I'm confused.
Well, I was confused too. So I'm going to, I'll do a little research on my own just to figure
it'd
it out.
It'd be cool
I
if they like
you guys would know off the top.
No,
of
it'd be cool
heads.
If they like put little names under them. You know, like when they showed them and kept so they sort of trained you when you.
But
walked.
So what do you think it was? What do you think the flu game was? If it wasn't the pizza, you know, what my guess is.
I think he had a bug or probably, who knows, maybe he had a couple drinks.
They were all hammered.
Yeah.
They were all drinking. Did you catch when he said, when he went to shoot around and he's on the court and he's like, hey, I already had two beers today and I played the piano. And someone goes, "You already hit the hotel bar?" And he goes, "No, I got the piano in my room." And I was like, "This is amazing." He's like, "Yeah, I've already had two beers today and played piano. And now I'm at the shoot around and the game is tonight." And so I just think that these guys could do that. And they probably, you know, at the beginning it was Jordan never partied. Jordan never did any of that. You know, Jordan didn't like anything other than playing basketball. I think by the end, Jordan had figured out how to enjoy himself. And I think those teams probably figured out how to enjoy themselves a little bit, you know? And so they're probably up there having a little gathering in that giant suite, and they're all drinking. And then it's like, what do you do when you've been drinking all day? Oh, let's get a pizza. Yeah, get a pizza.
Yeah, too. Let's get some grease. Make sure you put grease on it.
It could have been something as simple as that.
Yeah, when he said that he had already had a couple of beers and was playing the piano, and then he goes to the shoot around, and you would think that was, you know, a hyperbole, or it was
nope.
just. And then you look at some of the other scenes where constantly had a cigar going in the locker room.
Wasn't doing that early in the career.
Yeah, like all this stuff that he was doing, it wasn't 50 years ago. You know, this wasn't like 60s era NBA. No, this was in the late 90s where Jordan was drinking in the morning before he would go to practice and constantly smoking cigars. It's unbelievable. I mean,
I also question if those cigars were ever even lit.
Oh, they were lit?
Sometimes. A lot of times he's got the cigar in his mouth. Like, I don't even think that's lit. I think he just likes the cigar, just out of habit. I liked when they got to the hotel and he goes, "Is this the smoking floor?" And someone goes, It is now.
Yep.
Like, you know, that's just what they did. But, all right, so we got that on the table from The Last Dance. We'll obviously have some more thoughts on that throughout the day. Hardy's got a take on the golf that was on yesterday. I don't think it went so well. Hang on to that, Hardy. We'll do it next, and then we'll get to Governor Baker at the top of the hour.
Zoe and the Beatles. 98.5 The Sports Hub.
If Heineken Silver was a 60-second radio ad, it'd tell you all the stuff you need to know in only 30 seconds to keep things light and refreshing. Seriously, time me. Heineken Silver, a world-class light beer that's surprisingly crisp and refreshing, made with only premium quality ingredients and just 2.9 grams of carbs and 95 calories, all without compromising on taste. Heineken Silver, all the taste, no bitter endings. Order now at Heineken.com/silver. Must be 21 and older to purchase. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Whew, 30 seconds, that's it. Done. Peace.
First, our introduction. Zolak, Bertrand.
Double whammy.
Zolak and Bertrand. Continues 98.5, The Sports Hub.
Yeah, sports was back yesterday, guys. Can you feel it? A little NASCAR, a little golf. I watched absolutely none of it.
No.
Zoe, you?
Nothing.
Nothing.
Yeah. Zero.
I'm sure the ratings were not good for either event here in Boston. But, Hardy, you
subjected
yourself to the golf yesterday.
Well,
The
golf guys had shorts on, so you can tell right away it's not a real match.
Yeah, very casual. Very casual.
Yeah.
Go ahead, Hardy.
Well, I did watch I didn't watch any of the NASCAR.
Why would you? I watched Top Gun.
Yeah, it wasn't really wasn't something I was looking forward to, but I was very much looking forward to the golf. So, turned it on, and almost right away, I knew that this was going to go poorly.
Oh, God.
Because...
You're a golf guy. Oh, boy.
Well, this is, you know, obviously strange times, and they're coming up with these events that they never thought, but what are you going to do? You're going to have four guys out there, Ricky Fowler and Matt Wolf. And Matt Wolf's a fun guy to watch. He's 21 years old. He's got this wild swing. He hits the ball forever. And, you know, these two are both Oklahoma State guys. And then you got Dustin Johnson and Rory McIlroy. Dustin Johnson, who people like to watch on the course, maybe not much personality. Rory McIlroy, he's a good guy. And he's, you know, he's fun to hear talk. But what would you want from this event? If you had sat down and watched, you got four guys mic'd up. They're going to go out and play golf. They're going to play the team skins, which, number one, they kind of screwed that up already. I'd rather them just have four different charities and play a straight-up skins match like the old days. Nicholas, Palmer, Trevino, Chi-Chi, have those guys cutthroat and out playing just every man for himself. But they did it as teams. Okay, fine, minor hiccup. What do you want from this match with these four guys mic'd up? Had you watched it yesterday, what would you have liked to have seen?
Something fun, something interesting, some personalities,
yes,
some ball busting.
Balls. So instead, what we get is Mike Tirico in a suit in his home somewhere in Michigan. We get a couple other stiffs in a studio in another place in Florida. And then you get the ultimate collection of stiffs there at the golf course, including the chairman of Seminole Country Club, whatever, walking around in a full long sleeve shirt and khakis. He's the only one allowed to touch the pins. Like, you had a chance to make this loose and fun.
You had a pin guy?
And already you've got it like stuffy. You've got someone announcing on the first tee, flipping a coin. How about this? How about you have the four guys do it as the three of us and one more would go do. Stand on that first tee, throw a tee up in the air.
Crack
it. Wherever the tee lands and points at, you guys are going first. Okay? Keep it loose. Keep it fun. You don't need a rules official out there. You don't need an official score. You don't need four guys trailing you in golf carts. And the rest of it was cool. The fact that all four of these guys carried their clubs and walked 18 holes. All right. There. That's kind of inspired. Good. Don't give them all carts. You know, let these guys walk along with each other and talk to each other. Well, they tried talking to each other, but then Tirico and the other guys felt compelled to go in and make their money that day. So they're talking about stuff that really doesn't need to be talked about. All right, so we're an hour or two into the match. Well, now we have a chance maybe to find some rhythm, and a few skins have been won, and you know, things could get interesting. What can we do to kill the momentum? I know. Let's bring Bill Murray in for his very first Skype session of his life. He's got the camera all cockeyed. Murray, who is famously a bad interview, unless he was on David Letterman, is eating in the middle of it. He's, you know, throwing out all these non sequiturs. He's not he loves golf, but he's not the right fit for this type of thing. Maybe if he were there on the course, it would be fun, but he's stuck at home like everyone else. Yeah. That nightmare ends after about 10 minutes. When you think they're done with that, you know what? Guess who's on the phone? The president. Let's have the president talk for 10 minutes straight. We have no idea who's winning the holes. We have no idea. Is he talking about the golf? He's really talking about China being to blame for this whole virus. Now, people think he's doing a good job, and a lot of these players like him. He knows them all very well. It's just about, let's inject some politics into this, okay? because really...
You haven't had enough of that lately.
Yeah, really what we need is more politics and virus talk in the middle of what should have been just a fun goof that was going to raise millions of dollars for these COVID-19 relief efforts. And when it finally comes down to it, you got a chance to win it on the final hole.
Yeah. Sounds like we did the right thing by not watching any of this.
Oh, my God.
We're all in this together, pal.
And so you've got no one out there. It's dead quiet.
Hardy feels better from watching it.
Well, you know what you could hear? You know what the one thing you could hear perfectly throughout the entire thing? The drone of the blimp. That was
nice. All right, hey, we're going to get to headlines here, and we're going to have Charlie Baker on the other side. Let's highly anticipated press conference coming up just minutes from now from the governor.
If Heineken Silver was a 60-second radio ad, it'd tell you all the stuff you need to know in only 30 seconds to keep things light and refreshing. Seriously, time me. Heineken Silver, a world-class light beer that's surprisingly crisp and refreshing, made with only premium quality ingredients and just 2.9 grams of carbs and 95 calories, all without compromising on taste. Heineken Silver, all the taste, no bitter endings. Order now at Heineken.com/silver. Must be 21 and older to purchase. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Whew, 30 seconds, that's it. Done. Peace.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop, flop, flop.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Who's in studio?
Sorry? Excuse you?
There's people in studio.
What are you talking about?
Are the engineers there?
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, I
driving
wasn't
that train.
There's engineering going on here in the studio.
At a point,
oh,
Chuck.
Yeah? Things
Chuck
broken?
No. Nothing broken.
Oh.
What, Charlie? You don't want me to say that you're here? You don't want me to say what you're doing? I don't know. They got a measuring tape out. They're measuring, as you would say, Zoe.
Measuring. Really? You're all over TV, Charlie. What are you going to put? You going to put lines?
Imagine a place where you are never far from your next adventure. Welcome to Prince Edward Island, Canada. A destination where the breathtaking views rejuvenate the soul. Discover 700 miles of coastline with white sand beaches and red cliffs. The freshest flavors from land and sea. World-class golf, outdoor adventures, and authentic cultural experiences. Come find your island. Prince Edward Island, the official travel destination of the NHL and a proud partner of the Boston Bruins. Learn more at explorepei.com.
Making the workday a little more entertaining.
Floppity flop, flop, flop. There.
It's Zoe and the Beetle on 98.5, the Sports Hub.
Who's in studio?
Sorry? Excuse you?
There's people in studio.
What are you talking about?
Are the engineers there?
Yes.
Nice.
Oh, I
driving
wasn't
that train.
There's engineering going on here in the studio.
At a point,
oh,
Chuck.
Yeah? Things
Chuck
broken?
No. Nothing broken.
Oh.
What, Charlie? You don't want me to say that you're here? You don't want me to say what you're doing? I don't know. They got a measuring tape out. They're measuring, as you would say, Zoe.
Measuring. Really? You're all over TV, Charlie. What are you going to put? You going to put lines down for us to stay back?
That's right. But for one of us, yes.
Oh, boy.
That's good. Taking measures. Literally. I like that.
Measures.
Well played, Beetle.
I'm a
well
fan.
Well played.
Good. I like hearing that. That's excellent. Good news.
So we've been waiting for this press conference today, right? Today's the day. Today is the day. Get the big news on the phase four or four phases of opening, right?
I think, yeah, it's more clarification on what will be in each phase and what will be in the start here locally in Massachusetts. Yeah, I think that's what we get today. We'll probably have more things open by the end of this today, I assume. Maybe that's a bad assumption. I don't know. I mean, I'm not speaking from any informed standpoint other than I think that was the point of today. That's what Governor Baker has spoken about, that there would be more details offered on the 18th, and the 18th has arrived, though. So here we are.
Okay. I hope I can go to church Sunday, you know. Open that bad boy up. Let's go.
You go to church a lot, so?
I don't. you know what I do? I go to restaurants a lot. I do. We like to go out to eat a lot.
Well, you could like go to it. How about if you started attending your local church's potluck? And that
well,
way
you know
could,
what I do?
You could do
you
that.
Know what
good.
We used to do is a coffee social hour back in Pittsburgh when we used to go to church every day. I was an altar boy.
Oh.
So I would serve in the altar. We go downstairs, you put 50 cents, and you can either have your selection of lemonade or iced tea and a coffee and a nice cinnamon roll. They're very nice. And if you're really lucky, if the church had a food fair that week, with the galumpki and halushki, they would sell the extra pierogies, and oh, my God, that's when you hit the jackpot.
Ah, you're making me hungry.
Making me want to visit Pittsburgh.
Yeah. You're in Stiller country.
Stiller country.
Yeah.
So this press conference is supposed to begin somewhere around 11 a.m. It's 11:05.
So
he's going to back out?
He's like, oh, I don't know. He's like, half are going to hate me and half are going to love it. Just like, I got to do it, though. Oh.
Boy. So I'm not totally sure where the press conference is taking place today, but when it happens, we're going to
carry it live
for you. We're going to carry it live. So okay. let's leave it at that. And as soon as that does happen, we will have it for you. And it could happen literally any second. In the meantime, 617-779-0985 is the telephone number. We've talked about the last dance today, and also Hardy, not so thrilled. How much of the golf did you watch yesterday? How much time did you devote to it, Hardy?
So, actually, I was over in your neighborhood, Beetle, when it was actually starting. Super Blonde Blonde got a flat tire as she was dropping off some food for her mom. So I had to go pick her up. So I listened to the beginning of it on PGA Tour radio. And I could tell right away from the beginning that this was not going to go well. What with the announcement?
Hardy,
yes.
We got to go.
It looks like we got to go.
Let's do it.
All right, let's go to Governor Baker. Not yet. So, or it's going to be a moment. We're no, behind.
15 seconds, yeah. 15 seconds. We're just letting
them get an hour ago, so let's do it.
Listen to the beginning of it on PGA Tour Radio. And...
So good morning. I want to start today by recognizing the horrific toll that this virus has taken on so many people here in the Commonwealth. And I want to talk about who's behind all the numbers that we discuss in this room every day. Nurses, doctors, and all the frontline medical workers, some sick and doing their job and isolated from their family. First responders, essential workers, DCF social workers, MBTA bus and train drivers, and many, many other public servants who, as always, did what they had to do in order to serve us, but in some cases suffered terrible loss as a result. Furloughed or laid off workers who, despite coming in early, working the extra shifts, now by no fault of their own, are left wondering when that job comes back. Everyone suffering under the fear of the unknown amid this pandemic. Everyone who sacrificed a wedding or major moment in life and went without holding their loved ones at the exact time they needed to be held the most. And everyone who lost a friend, a brother, a sister, a mom, or a dad. There are tens of thousands of you right now here in the Commonwealth who have either grieved or are going through one of the hardest moments of your life. The toll this virus takes and continues to take on many of us is staggering. But the response, the fight, the millions of people who are doing what they have to do to push back has been brave and bigger. The retired medical workers who came back off the bench and straight into the COVID-19 ward. The friends and family members who help one another overcome the fear of the unknown. The parents and guardians who overnight became educators and are still putting in full days working remotely and teaching their kids at home. There are so many examples of Massachusetts rising to this occasion and fighting back to list them all. Today, as we start the phased return to our new normal, we are going to ask people once again to rise to the occasion as we continue to fight this virus. Our collective success depends on everyone, government, the private sector, and especially individuals, playing their part to move us forward. Today we lay out a roadmap to reopening Massachusetts while we continue to fight COVID-19. These two will be inseparable, getting back to work and fighting COVID until there is a medical breakthrough with treatments or a vaccine. And we cannot move forward unless we commit to continuing to slow the spread. To achieve that goal, reopening while continuing to bring the fight every day, I tasked Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito to work with Housing and Economic Development Secretary Mike Keneally to bring together experts from across Massachusetts' diverse economy. They listened and they learned from hundreds of points of view. Local government leaders, nonprofits, labor leaders, and small and large employers, to name just a few. At the same time, Health and Human Services Secretary Mary Lou Sutters and Public Health Commissioner Monica Burrell consulted Massachusetts' world-class healthcare leaders, and together, our administration developed this plan to move forward. We'll progress through four phases, opening more sectors of the economy and activities only when the public health data indicate it's appropriate to do so. Each phase will last at least 3 weeks, but may last longer if the public health data doesn't support moving forward. As I said earlier, COVID-19 has and will continue to take a toll here in Massachusetts. It remains up to all of us, government, the employer community, and most of all, the rest of us, as individuals, to continue to fight back against the virus, because that is the way we move forward through these phases. The report lays out not only which sectors of the economy are slated to open and when, but it lays out how businesses reopen while fighting the spread. And most importantly, this report lays out what individuals must do to enable us all to move through these phases. This effort will hinge fundamentally on personal responsibility. As everyone knows, we're not helpless in this fight. We all have roles to play, and you have proven time and time again that you can play them. We continue to ask everyone to do four things. Cover your nose and mouth when you can't distance yourself. The science is clear. Simple face coverings prevent the spread of this disease incredibly effectively. Wash your hands and wash surfaces often. This one needs no explanation. Keep your distance. Again, we all know this one by now, but it's as important today as it's ever been, and more so as we start this reopening process. The more we stay about 6 feet apart from one another whenever possible, the more we stop the spread. And lastly, stay vigilant for symptoms and stay home if you think you're sick. We all know this one by now, too. Alone, each of these four things can be highly effective at slowing and killing the virus. We have the scientific research now and makes that much clearer. But together, these four things are exponentially more powerful. And we are asking the private sector to support their employees, to be creative, to support working remotely whenever possible, and to follow the guidance that our team developed to prevent further spread. Sticking with these critical tasks is everyone's responsibility, and how well we do them will dictate how well we open Massachusetts. State and local governments will continue to step up testing capabilities alongside our community tracing program. Testing and tracing will remain integral to getting ahead of this virus, containing it, and a critical part of our ability to keep the economy moving. As I've said before, we have all been doing our jobs to fight back, and as a result, positive case rates are moving in the right direction and hospitalizations are down. The public health metrics that guide this process mean it's possible to reopening manufacturing facilities and construction sites effective today. And we're permitting more sectors of our economy to open effective May 25th and others on June 1st under phase one. Lieutenant Governor Polito will talk more about how this report lays out new rules of the road for each of those industries, and specifically the things businesses need and must do in order to reopen while effectively fighting the virus. These first steps, manufacturing and construction, provided these businesses follow the guidance we've developed, have limited face-to-face and customer interactions. And many similar operations open now under the essential order have been responsibly balancing operating and fighting the virus as well. Starting a week from now, we're permitting office space to reopen to 25% of its capacity, except in Boston. On May 25th, retail establishments may also offer curbside service, and some personal services such as barbershops and hair salons may reopen, provided they follow the new rules in this report. Places of worship will also be permitted to open with guidelines in place starting today. A number of outdoor facilities and recreation activities may also resume starting a week from now, as well as in accordance with those new rules. And our healthcare facilities will be permitted to begin seeing more patients on an agreed upon schedule over the next 2 weeks. I want to make clear that the Reopening Advisory Board and the team made every effort to be as clear and direct as possible when it comes to the new requirements these businesses must follow. But this is something no one's ever done before. Shutter, then reopen everything, from a beachfront to a factory floor, with standards in place to slow the spread of a highly contagious virus. So I ask everyone to keep this in mind. This guidance asks people to change behaviors, and it changes the way some of our favorite places look and feel. This is not permanent. At some point, there will be treatments and ultimately a vaccine. But for the foreseeable future, everyone needs to continue to do the right things to bring the fight to the virus so that we can continue to move forward. Today, the Department of Public Health also updated the stay-at-home advisory to reflect this stage of the reopening process. The new safer-at-home advisory instructs everyone to stay home unless they're headed to a newly opened facility or activity, and it also advises those over the age of 65 and those with underlying health conditions to stay home except for absolutely necessary trips for things like healthcare and groceries. This new advisory is important. As we enter this phased reopening, it's important to remember that everyone is safer at home. The virus will be with us throughout the reopening process, and everyone's required to cover their nose and mouth if you can't maintain 6 feet of distance from those around you. Everyone has a responsibility to wash their hands, distance themselves from others, and be vigilant about symptoms so that you can stay home, and you should stay home if you feel sick. How well everyone does these things will determine how well we move into later phases. You've all heard me say that we can't afford to take one step forward only to be forced to take two steps back. I know we'd all prefer to believe that the virus is less serious now and that it's behind us. It's nice outside. I understand the weeks feel like months. I think we understand all of this. Collectively, we have flattened the curve and avoided the spike in cases that would have broken our healthcare system. But if we don't keep up the fight and don't do the things that we all know we have to do and know we can do, we run the risk of creating a second spike in the fall. We've asked a lot of the people of the Commonwealth since this all began. And thankfully, millions and millions of people have answered the call and played their part. Once again, people need to be vigilant, they need to be careful, and they need to understand the role that they can play themselves as we continue to bring this fight to the virus. It's how we move forward together. With that, I'll turn it over to the Lieutenant Governor.
Thank you, Governor, and good morning. I'd like to start by first acknowledging the members of the Reopening Advisory Board. On behalf of our entire administration, we are incredibly grateful to all of you and your work. This plan required a tremendous amount of thought, planning, and preparation by the board. In the many hours and days that we worked together, our process was deep and diverse, and consisted of a collective group of voices that engaged in a productive dialogue to lay out this plan. This board consisted of an extremely talented group of dedicated people. And as we met with associations and businesses and residents, the members of the board were engaged and compassionate and ensured a variety of voices were listened to and we're at that table. Our work also would not have been possible without an extensive municipal engagement. From officials at the local level all across our Commonwealth, we are thankful for the direct involvement of the many mayors and town managers who advised us and worked with us. And while we have made clear that the public health data and guidance will dictate the timeline of moving into new phases, it is important that we continue to listen to and support our businesses across this Commonwealth. Specifically, we have established a new restaurant, accommodations, and tourism work group, consisting of industry representatives and municipal leaders that we will continue to have discussions with to help us determine the industry-specific protocols for meeting our safety standards. This group will help us shape the guidance that will allow these industries to reopen And when the data allows for it, they will do so safely and with in mind the need to continue to fight the virus. As the governor said, we will continue to support the business community as they implement the mandatory workplace safety standards for reopening that we announced last week. Businesses operating to provide essential services will have until May 25th to comply with these mandatory safety standards. Businesses newly opening in phase one must comply with these standards before they open. And as we reopen and keep fighting COVID-19, we are providing three areas of guidance for each sector, industry, and business to follow. You've heard us talk about the general social guidance, covering, washing, and distancing. And for businesses, the mandatory safety standards for their workplace and the sector-specific safety protocols and best practices about how to meet those standards. The sector-specific guidance and recommended best practices aim to reduce the risk of COVID-19 transmission in specific industries so that each industry safely reopens. Businesses are expected to implement these protocols and in addition to the general mandatory workplace standards. So the standards and the protocols and the best practices are offered to help businesses comply. Starting today, the materials for the businesses and sectors eligible to open in the first phase are included on the Reopen Massachusetts website at mass.gov/reopening. Each sector will have access to a sector circular. It's a document, a resource which will include specific mandatory safety standards and recommended best practices and social distancing, hygiene protocols, staffing and operations, and cleaning and disinfecting for each sector. They will also have access to a sector checklist included in the circular and developed to serve as a guidance for employers and businesses of all sizes as they adjust their operations. The administration will require businesses to self-certify. And what that means is that businesses must develop a COVID-19 control plan outlining how its workplace will implement the safety standards in order to prevent the spread of COVID-19. These required materials are located on the Reopen Massachusetts website, and they include a COVID-19 control plan template. This is a draft. You do not need to reinvent the wheel. This is a place for you to start. You should use it. A compliance attestation poster demonstrating to your workforce and the public that you have incorporated these safety standards into your workplace and a poster to show. And signs and posters describing the rules for maintaining social distancing, hygiene protocols, cleaning and disinfecting. Again, businesses in phase one must complete these steps in order to open. And essential businesses that have been operating will be required to complete these steps by May 25th. These workplace safety standards will be jointly enforced by local boards of health, the Department of Public Health, and the Department of Labor Standards. We will work together with our partners at the local level to move forward through this process. Most enforcement actions may come from a worker or a customer who might initiate a complaint. But the goal with enforcement is to educate and promote compliance. We want workplaces to be safer and to incorporate these standards into their places of operation. And working with cities and towns, we will support our businesses and give them the tools they need to succeed as they make adjustments and welcome back their workers. And as we continue to move forward towards a new normal, we'll continue to post the guidance for sectors opening in later phases online and in advance. So as businesses in this time of uncertainty can prepare and plan for when that time comes. Governor Baker outlined what we can expect to see in phases. And it's important that we continue to each play our part and be cautious and careful as we together work to reopen so that we can move forward and not backwards. We will continue to follow the data to make determinations of gathering sizes, restrictions, and capacity limitations based upon the trends. And we know that many of our homegrown businesses in every corner of our state are suffering. We want to get everyone back up and running when it's appropriate to do so based on the public health metrics outlined today. And it bears repeating that Massachusetts has been one of the hardest hit states in our country, right behind New York and New Jersey, and we must be cautious and vigilant as we reopen. And as I mentioned about planning and preparing, our restaurant, accommodations, and tourism work group convened this past weekend, and we will help them develop procedures for safe reopening. And campgrounds and playgrounds and community pools, athletic fields, and youth sports will resume operations in phase two with guidelines. We currently plan that phase three will allow for the opening of arts and entertainment, gyms, and other business activities. This will all push us toward phase four, a full resumption of activity, and what we've described as a new normal. If your business is listed in phase two or phase three, in order to start working on your reopening plans now, you can visit the website, the Reopen Massachusetts website, to access the general workplace safety standards that all businesses are required to comply with. So you can get a head start and look at those and start to think about how you will adjust your workplace. Now, a couple of key components that transcend all of this are childcare and public transportation. In March, we stood up an emergency childcare system to support children of essential workers and vulnerable families with extra virus mitigation protocols. We are incredibly grateful to those providers who have stepped forward in the midst of this crisis to provide these essential childcare services to children and families. Now, during phase one, the emergency child care system we have already in place will be utilized to meet the needs of people with no alternative for care. We are also encouraging families to continue to find any alternatives to group care to help stem the spread of the virus. Now, currently, only 35% of our emergency child care capacity is occupied. And the system has capacity to serve more families, to provide care options as more workers head back to work and sectors become active again. The system we established, as you may recall, has capacity for 10,000 children statewide, and we're at 35% capacity today. As next steps, the Department of Early Education and Care and DPH are developing additional health and safety standards, which are being reviewed by Children's Hospital, to make sure when we're ready to fully reopen child care and camps that we're ready. We'll have more to say on that as we prepare for the future phases. Now, in that same vein, we are aware that summer camps serve an important purpose, not only for our children, but for our families. DPH is partnering with local boards of health to develop health guidelines to be implemented in over 1,400 camps across our state to enable a safe reopening of those activities. Pending public health data, it is possible that camps could reopen in phase two with limitations and specific safety standards in line with CDC guidance. That should be available in the next couple of weeks, the timelines and the guidelines that we apply.
Okay, that is Lieutenant Governor Karen Polito that you are currently hearing as she outlines some details on child care. Governor Baker first spoke today offering up the phases of the plan. Three phases into a fourth phase that would be the new normal, and outlining some of the businesses that will be allowed to open starting on May 25th. We'll get back to this. We'll get to some of the details of this. If you missed any of it, we'll do that coming up next. We'll go to Hardy with headlines right now.
Sports Hub headlines.
Now we got some of those details for you. Thank you, Mr. Bertrand, as Governor Baker and Lieutenant Governor Polito are addressing the Commonwealth right now about the reopening of Massachusetts Phase 1, which begins officially today. Essential businesses, manufacturing, and construction. Governor Baker had this to say about each phase of the reopening. He had this to say.
We'll progress through four phases, opening more sectors of the economy and activities only when the public health data indicate it's appropriate to do so. Each phase will last at least 3 weeks, but may last longer if the public health data doesn't support moving forward.
On May 25th, according to Phase 1, lab space, office space, limited personal services like hair, pet grooming, car washes, and retail with remote fulfillment and curbside pickup should be able to resume once again. That would take place on May 25th. More on this coming up here on Zolak and Bertrand. On 98.5, the Sports Hub, headlines are brought to you by John Sewer and Drain Cleaning, 24-hour on-call service for your clogged drain emergencies. Go to johnsewer.com. I'm Hardy on Boston's Home for Sports. 98.5, the Sports Hub. More headlines coming up in 30 minutes.
Zoe and Beetle, 98.5, the Sports Hub.
If Heineken Silver was a 60-second radio ad, it'd tell you all the stuff you need to know in only 30 seconds to keep things light and refreshing. Seriously, time me. Heineken Silver, a world-class light beer that's surprisingly crisp and refreshing, made with only premium quality ingredients and just 2.9 grams of carbs and 95 calories, all without compromising on taste. Heineken Silver, all the taste, no bitter endings. Order now at Heineken.com/silver. Must be 21 and older to purchase. Enjoy Heineken responsibly. Whew, 30 seconds, that's it. Done. Peace.